Welcome to the podcast service of Sydney's Heart 1032, available on the web at heart1032.com.au.
Okay, well, you might have heard of the Alpha Course. It's basically a bunch of people get together for a meal, chat about the meaning of life and what insights the Christian faith might have to some of those questions. What you may not know is that it's now running in over 80% of UK prisons, about a third of Australian prisons, and in prisons in over 40 countries around the world. They've got a kind of a special version of it going into the prisons. It's estimated that about 30,000 men and women have now completed the Alpha Course in prison. That's quite something. Paul Cowley is the International Director for Alpha for Prisons and Alpha for Forces. He's normally based in the UK. Right now, he's made the trek out to talk to us. Paul, welcome to Australia and welcome to Open House.
Thank you, Sharon. It's great to be here.
Well, it's quite something, isn't it? I mean, the Alpha Course has become so popular in general, but why has it become so popular in prisons?
I think, there's a lot of reasons to that. I guess because it's a structured course. The way it started really was two inmates became Christians, father and son, and they were quite notorious criminals. The father was part of the Cray Twins, which was the East End gangs in London, and the son was following in his father's footsteps, and they became Christians through attending the Alpha Course. And that had a massive impact on the prison that they were in. And men followed them into chapel and they became Christians. And then the father and son moved to another prison and same thing happened again. And as they moved through the prison system in about 5 years, Alpha started in those five prisons. And then as men became Christians and got transferred around the UK, as they do for overcrowding or lots of other reasons, other Alpha courses started up.
What a beautiful story. It's very much, for Christians who are listening, they know very much about the Apostle Paul's story, where he was a persecutor and then turned out to be the greatest promoter of the Christian message ever.
Absolutely, and Michael and Brian, they're both close friends, Michael especially, and he helps me a lot, really. We get the opportunity to travel around the world to different prison systems, and he comes with me. Obviously, it's a powerful story that he's got. Really. I mean, he wouldn't attribute anything to him. He was just there at the time. But God uses certain people in certain ways.
Yeah, absolutely. A phrase that's often used is the recidivism rate, of the amount of people that go back to prison after being released because they get involved in some of the crime. Do you know whether it's reducing that rate?
Yeah, early days. I know it sounds 10 years, but we formed a charity in 2002 called Caring for Ex-Offenders. It's a Christian-based charity run out of the church, Holy Trinity Brompton in London. And really what that does is help the men and women when they come out of prison. And we've done a survey to the churches that are linked into that charity, which is around about 800 of all denominations. And we've just sent a questionnaire out to all those churches saying what you've just asked, Sharon. Are the guys still there? Are they still working? Are they back with their families? What's happening? Are they back in prison? And the average rate of reoffending or recidivism in the UK is around 68%. And the early stages of this survey we've done is coming in as if the men stay in the charity, if they stay linked in with the church, then it's coming in at about 26%, dramatically lower.
Wow.
And the Home Office are investigating that at the moment. They've given us someone to a professor, John Fox, who's investigating the statistics, so that they're interested at the moment, and so am I.
And so they should be, really, with those kinds of results. Is there one part about the Alpha Course that the guys particularly get?
I think the Alpha Course is it's kind of food, really. The format of it is they eat together in some way, and that could be anything from a chocolate biscuit in some high security prisons to a meal in some lower category prisons. There would be a talk, a gospel presentation about something, who's Jesus, why did he die, and what about the Bible, or something like that. And then the main part of it is there's a small group discussion. It's that bit where people start to let their defences down, where you start to hear their stories. And I think that's where the healing takes place, really, as in my own life. Maybe you start to think, this stuff, maybe it is true, or maybe it isn't, but it's the small group that I think the men enjoy, really.
We're talking to Paul Cowley. He's the International Director for Alpha for Prisons and Alpha for Forces, and we should touch on that as well, that Alpha is actually being used in war zones, I believe.
The UK military, and amazingly, lots of other military units around the world, different armies, are using the course, and the reason for that is the course has been translated into over 88 languages. So you can see it starts to become easy to use. It's in 158 countries already around the world. So the forces are picking up on that, and we've had forces on operations in Afghanistan, in Iraq, using this, padres using the course to talk to their men, really. Well, I guess before they might make the ultimate sacrifice.
Sure. Now, you yourself have actually got quite a story in this regard, because you have spent some time in prison. In fact, it goes back even earlier than that. You were kicked out of school, I guess we might just say. Yeah. Was that the result of a disturbed background or a disturbed family life? How did it all work out for you?
I guess I was born, Jared, into a dysfunctional family. You don't really know it's dysfunctional while you're in it, because that's all you've got. My mum, my dad and me. I was an only child. My father was an alcoholic and quite a violent man, worked on the dockyards in Liverpool. My mother was the same, a heavy drinker, and they were both quite chaotic. And we lived in some hard areas in England, Liverpool, Manchester, Birkenhead. And I was brought up on estates in different areas. And a few things happened really at 15. That was a bit of a turning point for me. I was expelled from school, you're quite right, for truancy, really. I was bullied quite a lot at school, and it was a hard, comprehensive school. And I didn't go to it a lot, obviously, and combination of lots of different reasons, I got asked to leave. So at 15, I was working in a butcher's shop, actually, in Manchester. And the same time that happened, I got thrown out of my house. I got in between my mum and dad in a big argument. My dad gave me a clout, and in my arrogance and youth, I thought, right, I'll stay out. And I ended up living on the streets for a while, which was okay. And I got involved with a gang of skinheads at the time in Manchester. And I moved into a squat with them and really moved into crime. And I got involved in petty crime at first, just stealing things. And then that moved into breaking an entry, then stealing cars, and that started to be my life. So I got involved with the police. You know, if you stay in that lifestyle, it leads ultimately to prison. And I went to prison as a young man in a place called Risley.
How old were you?
How old was I then? I was about 17, 16, 17.
As a very young man.
Yeah, well, Risley was a detention centre, Borstal. They don't do those things now. They've changed the system. They call them Young Offenders Institutes. But I went in there for a while, and that really shook me up a little bit. You know, prison has a way of changing you. I thought I was a bit tough until I went in there and found out, you meet your match in a prison. There's always someone tougher than you or harder than you. Mm-hmm. I came out of there when I was sort of 19, 20, didn't know what to do. I ended up in Manchester driving a truck, and that was great. I was out of prison, but I was bored, and I saw a poster for the army. 26 weeks in basic training, and then I was posted out to Germany, to 49 Field Regiment, which was an artillery regiment. I wanted to take my girlfriend with me, Lynn, at the time, and I couldn't. You can only take wives. So we got married within about a fortnight, and I love the army.
You stayed in there for a few years, didn't you?
I stayed in there for 16 years. Trouble really in the army was I couldn't settle and never really fulfilled in anything. We got married. That didn't work out too well, so we had a child a year later, Clinton. My son was born, and I thought that would fix our marriage, but it didn't. I ended up really taking after my father, drinking, womanizing. I became a bully in the army, even though I said I was bullied. You know, it can change you, so I ended up bullying people, I guess, became quite violent like my dad. And when Clinton was three, I couldn't handle that, so I got divorced, and I just threw myself into my career, which was the only stable thing in my life. Had a year of being single and free in the army, but didn't like that, then got married again. That lasted a year. More women, more drinking, more arguments, and another divorce. And I guess that was my my life, really, quite chaotic.
At what point did you then realise, I can't keep on going, I've become my dad? Was there a wake-up call, an epiphany?
There was, really. I mean, I wish it had come a lot earlier, but when I left the army, or just before I left the army, my mother got back in touch with me. When I left home at 15, my father divorced my mother and moved in with a younger woman, and I never saw the pair of them, really, for a long time. My mum got quite ill, and the army tracked me down. Basically, I got to see my mum when she was in a ward in a hospital in Coventry. I was with her for 3 days, and she went into a coma. My mum died in my arms. I got into bed with her one night in this isolation ward she was in, and she sort of fell asleep on my chest and died. And that was quite traumatic, really, because one, my mum was dead, and two, I thought, where's my father? And the other thing that came into my head was, where's my son? You know, things in my life that I kind of messed up, I wondered where they were. I put all my mum's stuff, her material stuff, the flat she was in bin bags, and gave it to Oxfam. And as I was going through it, I found a Bible. And that was a shock for me, the Bible, because you can imagine, no religious upbringing. My mum and dad weren't Christians, no religious education at my school. And when I found the Bible, it shocked me. And I went through it and had my mum's name in it. And at the back was a telephone number, and it was a Manchester dialing code. And I phoned it and I said, "Who are you? How do you know my mother? And what are you doing in this Bible?" And the woman said to me, I know your mother, Brenda, because we go to church together." I said, "My mother doesn't do church. I don't quite understand that." She said, "Oh yeah, your mum became a Christian 2 years ago." And long story short, I remember thinking, how could my mother be a Christian? I had really no idea what a Christian was, but I didn't like them. You know, I thought they were kind of odd, dressed in an odd way, spoke in an odd way, and why on earth would you want to be one of them? I went on a bit of a mission. Me and my girlfriend Amanda moved into a flat in London, and I went looking at churches. And I wanted to know why she went to church and why on earth she'd become a Christian. So I went in lots of churches, and that was really weird. Big churches, small churches, you know, people would rush up and swamp you with biscuits and cups of tea, and then some churches no one had come near you, you know, they'd move away from you. I left the army, I grew my hair and I grew a beard, and I must have kind of looked a bit scary. It was classic. You'd sit down in one of the pews and the lady next to me would just, you know, hold her handbag slightly tighter than right. She did before. And one of the churches I walked in was this church in London, Holy Trinity Brompton, which is an Anglican church, whatever that was at the time. And as I left that service, someone gave me a leaflet. And it was an Alpha Course leaflet. So I went on the Alpha Course.
And the rest is history.
I don't know why I went on there, really. But, you know, I got more than I bargained for. Halfway through the course, I met with God. Uh-huh. Not the God I thought I knew, the living God. You know, and I met his son, Jesus. I thought Jesus was this wimpy character, really, that no one like me would want to hang around. I thought he's not for me. But then I found out that... you know, he knocked around with the marginalised. Mm-hmm. He went to people like me, people who were rough, street people. He was basically everything I was looking for. Yeah.
And now look what you're doing now, the very course that brought you new spiritual life. You're now one of the directors of, at an international level. It's quite ironic. I bet you, when you were dreaming about what you might be when you're a kid, you never probably thought it was going to be something like this.
To put me back in prisons, I've been trying to stay out of prison all my life. Yes. And now I'm trying to get in them, really, every day, really, to talk about him and tell people about this course.
Yeah. Well, it's an amazing story, and it's an amazing course. And I just, the more and more that I hear about the Alpha Course and the way that it seems to be just infiltrating every little nook and cranny of society, the more and more I'm excited about it. If you want to know more, the Alpha Course website address for Australia is alpha.org.au. Paul, thanks for coming in, and thanks for sharing your story. I'm sure it's touched a lot of us.
Sheridan, thank you very much. It's great.
That's Paul Cowley, the International Director of Alpha for Prisons and Alpha for Forces.
We hope you enjoyed this Heart 1032 podcast. To listen to more great audio, visit heart1032.com.au.